quality. We're a relatively small firm, unlike some of the other global managers you've heard speaking at this conference. We have 60 employees. 58 of them are based in Wilmington, along with Dave, and there's myself and one colleague here. We have very, very low turnover of staff, which is highly unusual in the investment management industry. Two reasons for that. Firstly, our structure, we're a privately owned firm. Of our 60 employees, 36 are equity owners in the firm. So 60%, very widely spread across the company. And secondly, it's about our culture. I won't go into detail other than to say, great place to work. So the result is very stable, stable staff. And the last thing I mentioned was discipline. We have a highly disciplined investment process. It's a process that we've used for the whole 22 years history of our firm. And it's, in fact, it's a process that the founders used prior to founding Marvin and Palmer. Importantly, it works, but I won't talk about that now because that's for the other end of the session. For now, I want to introduce you to my colleague, Dave Shane. Dave is president and portfolio manager with Marvin and Palmer Associates. Dave joined the firm in 1991, initially as an analyst, then as a head of trading, and now as a portfolio manager. On top of all that, he's a really nice man, so over to Dave.
Thanks, Laurie. I thought Boyd was bringing me a chair up here, actually. So. I just echo the comments at the beginning of this session about if you haven't traveled to some of the emerging markets, if you can, do so. It's every time I even begin to lose confidence or enthusiasm for the emerging markets, just go take a trip to somewhere in China or go to Russia or go to Vietnam, and your eyes will open up and you will put more money in emerging markets for your clients, I guarantee it. When I first started in the early 1990s, the idea of emerging markets were much more like the frontier markets are today. Higher risk, people were worried about them, but higher volatility, but long-term, a lot more return. Today, the emerging markets have grown up quite a lot. There's not near the sovereign risk that existed 20 years ago when we first started managing assets in emerging markets. Yet the multiples are still down around 10 times. The growth rates are much higher. We'll go through some pictures here, but I think you're going to, at the end of this, hopefully have a renewed enthusiasm for emerging markets if the most recent investment period has soured you on it. You know, markets are funny things. They're made up of people. They're made up of all of us, and we all have opinions. And if I threw a stock or a market out there, probably half the people would be buyers and half would be sellers. That's what makes a market. We all have opinions. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. You win in this business if you're right more often than you're wrong. But unfortunately, a lot of people are wrong more often than they're right, and they go away. We all watch CNBC and the Financial Review and the financial news shows here, Bloomberg TV. They march out the pundits. The pundits tell us that you have to buy financials, that they're value, and they're going to go up. Or they'll march out a pundit right next to them, and they'll say, oh, financials are a value trap. You can't own that. Well, sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong. And the scary part about the investment management business is most people form their opinions based on other people's opinions. And I think that's a really dangerous way of investing. And at Marvin & Palmer, we take a much safer way of investing. We listen to the markets. The markets are always right. We can argue with them. We can think they're right. We can think they're wrong. At the end of the day, no matter what happens, that's reality. The market was right. So for us, it's a lot safer to listen to the market and not be so arrogant as to tell the market what we think it should be doing, but to step back, identify what's happening, and then construct our client portfolios accordingly. That's a safer way of investing. The investable universe, the market, it's really big. You know, there are 26 developed market countries in the MSCI World Index. There are 1,500 companies with market caps over $5 billion. That's large cap. That's a lot of companies, 26 countries. Emerging markets, that's 26 countries and emerging, 23 in the MSCI world. There are over 1,500 companies with market caps over $1 billion in emerging. You know, how do investors come to grips with that? And how do you construct a portfolio that's concentrated enough to add value with conviction around such a large universe of 26 countries and 1,500 companies? That's the question. The answer is the markets will tell you where to go if you listen to them. You don't have to fight the markets. You know, I started talking about people being investors when I at the beginning of this presentation. We all invest with emotions. We have behaviors. The fact is that because we invest with emotion and our behavior, there are momentum that occurs in stock prices and market prices. It's very identifiable. If you step back and you look at how humans behave and how they invest, you can identify where these trends are. And if you take advantage of these trends, then I guarantee you, you will be able to increase your excess returns for your clients. We've done that over a long period of time, outperforming the benchmark in everything we do. Above that, though, you can even add more value if you focus the portfolio on leadership and quality companies. You know, there are distressed assets out there. There are bombs waiting to go off. Very rarely will you get hurt by investing in the highest quality leadership companies. It's just a safer way of investing. Over a long period of time, I'm going to show you how that adds value to your client portfolio, how we've added value to our client portfolios. Let's take a look at a couple of trends. We've all seen these before, but just to put them in perspective, this one is probably most famous, you know, the technology bubble of the late 1990s. Well, this bubble ran from the end of 1995 all the way to 2000. This was a trend. If you would have invested in this trend, you would have outperformed the MSCI World Index by 330 percentage points. Technology was up 425%, World Index was up 93%. That's a trend. More recently, materials. After the tech bubble blew up, materials, energy took off. That's been leadership trend ever since the turn of the century. If you would have invested in the materials sector since 1999, you would have gained 130% absolute, roughly. That's relative to an MSCI World Index that's down about 4%. That's adding value to your client portfolios if you're able, if you have a process that you're able to identify and stick with these trends through various periods of volatility. This is probably one of the most famous, it's a classic example, Japan during the 1980s. Japan went up 1,000% during the decade of the 1980s. That's relative to the World Index that went up about 330%. You beat the index by 675% by investing in Japan during the 1980s. Wow, you know, you do that for your clients, you're gonna have a lot of happy clients at the end of the day. That's an investable trend. This next one's my favorite though. This is the emerging markets. Since the major market bottoms in October of 2002, March of 2003 for the international markets, let's call it the end of 02, emerging markets are up about 300% relative to the world index, up about 96. So you've added over 200 percentage points by focusing client portfolios on the emerging markets since 2002. That is a lot of value added relative to large benchmarks. Now, why is it my favorite? It's my favorite because I think it could do this before it's all over. And I think you've got years left of this before it looks like that. Matches a lot of the same fundamental criteria that Japan did in the 1980s. It's not nearly as long of tooth. Valuations are reasonable. Growth is strong. This, to me, is a great opportunity. Hey, wait a minute, you say. Markets are efficient. Everybody knows all the same information, you know, random walk theory. You know, everybody believed in that not that long ago. Markets are absolutely efficient. No active management can't add that kind of value to client portfolios. I'll acknowledge part of that. Markets are partially efficient. All the information's out there. We all know it. We're all subject to the same news reports, earnings releases. It's all there. But the fact is, we all discover that information at different times. We interpret it in different ways in terms of our conviction levels. We believe it, we don't believe it. And finally, we act on it differently. You know, some people actually interpret it and go out and invest client portfolios that way. And some people, because of benign neglect or better opportunities or different opportunities, don't act on it at all. So markets are generally efficient. They're not completely efficient. Momentum, and I'm certainly not going to go through these academic studies, please. I won't bore you before lunch. But, you know, many times we're giving presentations to prospective clients and we talk about relative price strength trends and momentum. They'll say, prove it to us. It's on you to prove it to us that momentum exists. Well, fortunately, I don't have to do it because there have been several academics, many more than this, long list, that have proven that momentum exists in markets. The most famous and the one that's most often cited is Jagadish and Tipman in 1993. And they really pioneered the concept of looking at winners and losers in past portfolios over 3 to 12 month periods and projecting them forward 3 to 12 months and measuring whether the outperformers continued to outperform, which they did, and the underperformers continued to underperform, which they did. So they proved that momentum exists in markets. They didn't say why, but markets are serial correlating, markets and stocks. They came back in 2001 and did the same thing for the period of the 1990s, same results. More interesting, really, though, is the study that the London School of Business did and released just this spring, 2008, where they looked at the UK market for 100 years. They went all the way back to 1900. The data is most readily available from 1956 to 2007, so 50 years. They built winner and loser portfolios based on rolling 12-month periods, and they found that the top 20% of outperformers beat the bottom 20%, the underperformers, by almost 11 percentage points on an annualized basis. That's a lot, 11 percentage points annualized, the UK market. That's history. That's fact. That's what's happened. So momentum exists. So why not take advantage of it? You know, I love this cartoon. It's, you know, the running with the bulls. Everything we do in life pretty much is with the grain. You know, we drive with traffic. You know, we sail with the wind at our backs. We canoe downstream. You know, we don't canoe upstream, we canoe downstream. Yet when it comes to investing, everybody wants to fight the market. Everybody thinks that they've got a little piece of information that can give them the edge, that it can go the other way and be a contrarian. Well, that's really difficult to do. It's so much easier to work with the market and let the market be a wind at your back than a wind in your face. Why not take advantage of all of the information that's out there and the trends that are out there? And over time, not consistently, there'll be random months or quarters or even a year where you'll underperform. But over time, you know, running with the bulls is a lot safer than running against the bulls. I've never met anybody that's alive, probably, that ran in the other direction. So we talked about momentum. It exists, but why? You know, why does momentum exist? And it really goes back to the discovering, interpreting, and reacting to fundamental data and news flow. There are two behaviors that we all experience, that we all portray in terms of underreacting and overreacting to news flow and fundamental data. We all do it. We get too bearish at times, and when news flow starts to improve, we don't believe it because we think it's going to go down forever. And sometimes we get too euphoric. And in 1999 in December, I would have bet the ranch that the technology trend would have lasted another 10 years. I was wrong, would have been wrong, was wrong. But the fact is we all exhibit these behaviors. You have to have tools that help you override these human emotions. This is behavioral finance. This is what drives markets. Our emotions drive equity markets. And it's terrific that this has become a real topic of study where people are finally starting to realize that, you know, investors are really made up of people. People have emotions, and emotions influence their investment decisions. This is a typical investor cycle. This happens over and over again. You've all seen it. It's going to happen again. Everybody gets very bearish right here. Markets and stocks are bought on expectations. At this point in the cycle, everybody's bearish. Nothing can go right. But then all of a sudden, something happens. You know, a company will present a positive earnings surprise. A CEO will go out and start talking about an improving environment. They'll win a new order. They'll come out with a new product, a new service. Most investors will underreact to this positive news. They don't believe it. They don't want anything to do with it. But a few investors will buy it, and the stock price will start going up. And then Merrill Lynch will write a big buy report. They'll go from sell to buy. And guys like me will read it, and we'll get interested in it. And we'll buy a little bit more. And then another positive earnings surprise comes out. Margins increase. Pricing environment gets better. Things improve over time. And you get these trends that develop. And this isn't a one day, one month. These can last years. They can last a decade. It takes time for us all to buy in to the idea that, hey, this is a great investment idea. But eventually, we get up here. And that's when things are different this time. That's the death nail for, you know, things are different. It's never going to go down again. So the company, the market, whatever, you'll get a bad piece of information. They'll miss an earnings number. They'll miss a product launch. But because we were conditioned, we're overreacting to good news, we ignore that piece of bad information. Well, some people don't ignore it. They sell it. Some people short it. Market goes down a little bit. We get a little worried, do our homework. Most of us still believe it. We make excuses why it's going to keep going on forever. But a few don't. They sell it. Stock starts going down, and this whole process starts to unwind as the fundamentals deteriorate, investors lose conviction, and multiples contract. This whole cycle repeats over and over and over again, and we're all subject to these same types of human behavioral influences. It's kind of fun once you understand how markets work to be able to put that into perspective and invest accordingly. But what we found is that not only identifying trends and investing with trends is beneficial for clients, but focusing portfolios on leadership and quality can really add a lot of value to client portfolios. Quality leadership companies are generally the pioneers of the new trends. They're the gold standard. Most investors have greater conviction, which causes them to overreact and underreact to a greater degree with the leadership and higher quality companies. And they tend to get the highest multiples during an upcycle because, again, they're the gold standard and you pay more for the gold standard. Dell during the late 1990s is a perfect example of this. You know, Dell pretty much invented the concept of being a platform company. They outsourced manufacturing, they were brand building, they controlled their distribution, and during the latter part of the 1990s, because they were the leadership company, not only did their share price go up, but they had multiple times PE expansion. That's what leadership companies can do when they're in gear and in a positive trend. You know, Fortune every year publishes a list of the 10 most admired companies in America. And I stumbled upon this study some time ago, and I asked our quantitative analysts to try and replicate it, and they did. What they found was if you buy the Fortune most admired companies every year, 10 companies, and most admired, they ask CEOs, directors, analysts, investors, consumers, and they rate the companies on products and services and managements and balance sheets, just how they treat their employees. It really is the highest quality companies. If you go back and buy those portfolios and hold them for 12 months over the last 20 years, you could have added 600 basis points, 6% to the S&P 500. That's only investing in quality, not doing any homework other than spending $2.50 for a Fortune magazine. That's a pretty good deal. Quality matters. You know, how do investors, something like myself or other professional investors, how would I think you should identify leadership companies, quality companies? Well, we look at strength in managements. We want managements that articulate their story to us, tell us what they're going to do. They do it. We come back. They tell us how it went. They're there every time. They're honest. They're open. They communicate effectively. Companies that have strong franchises, the leadership companies, the ones that are taking market share, the ones that have pricing power, those are the dominant franchises. Finally, strengthen balance sheets. You know, you don't want companies that are at risk of bankruptcy. That's the worst thing you can do for your clients is explain why a company you owned for them went bankrupt. That's a horrible experience. So, you know, what you really want to do is you want to have companies that can afford to finance the growth in the franchise that the management's trying to get across. We did a back test based on our process and looked at this red bar, which represents positively trending stocks in the U.S. market over the last 20 years, creating monthly portfolios. This back-tested portfolio beat the S&P 500 by 200 basis points. It also beat the Russell 1000 growth, this is a growth portfolio, by another percentage point. So only investing in trends, if you have a disciplined system, you can add value to the major market benchmarks. This, by the way, is a real live domestic U.S. portfolio that focuses on a process based on trend identification with a quality and leadership orientation. And we believe that focusing on quality and trends above just the trends can add additional value, which in fact it has over years. We did the same thing for sectors. We back-tested sectors over the last 12 years. Positive performing sectors, trending sectors, beat the MSCI World Index by over 10%, by about 11%. Countries beat the World Index by a little bit less, by about 5%. This makes sense to me. This is a developed market backtest, but you know, in the developed market, sectors have become more important than countries. So maybe that's another paper for next year, but it validates what I would have thought coming into this. So what are the conclusions here? The conclusions are that we all have human emotions, and we're all investors. And whether we like it or not, those emotions influence our decisions, both in what we do and when we do it, which is really important. Because we invest with human emotions, markets have momentum. That momentum results in trends. If you step back and listen to the market, you can identify where these trends are and you can take advantage of them, overlay quality, overlay leadership, and you can add value for your client portfolios. I like this cartoon too because it's really how things work. You know, it's like whisper down the lane with your kids. It's, you know, it just morphs as it goes and it builds energy and it builds momentum. And it's because markets are made up of investors. Investors are people. People have emotions, and emotions dictate how we do our investments. This is how we view the world at Marvin & Palmer. We think it's a safer way of investing. Listening to the market, it's less arrogant. You're not inflicting your opinions on the market. You're really listening to what the market has to say. Again, I'll be happy to take any questions, or Lorraine might have some comments, but thank you for coming today.
So Dave's presentation was all about trends, leadership, and quality. So questions?
Yeah, I was just going to say that momentum bit, I think you sort of answered it, but yeah, how do you work out when a strong trend suddenly, because a lot of those strong trends end in a big problem.
And that's the trick. If you look at the MSCI Emerging Markets Index since 2002, there have been 7, I think, double-digit corrections, between 10 and 25%. The trick is to have a disciplined process that doesn't look at something as simplistic as just a Bloomberg chart, but that puts corrections in trends in perspective of the longer-term trend, so that once you break a certain point in those trends, based on what we use as a relative price strength tool, but having a disciplined process that once a certain point is broken on those trends, that you no longer override that broken trend because you've fallen in love with the idea. A lot of people fell in love with the idea of Japan in the 80s or technology in the 90s. They'll fall in love with emerging markets before it's over, and they won't believe the bad news. So that's all about having a disciplined process that forces you to take risk off the table when it looks like those trends have started to reverse.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Are you a long-only investor? And if you are, do you go to a high cash position when you see a negative?
Answer to both of them, we are long-only. We have no short positions in the portfolio. We do not go to high cash positions in the portfolio. The wonderful thing about emerging markets is how diversified it is. You know, 26 countries in emerging markets. There are generally places that are not correlated with the current market environment that you can kind of temporarily go hide in. Not all the time. This environment has brought the entire emerging markets index down and most of the countries down with them. But some have performed a lot better than others. When an index is down 25%, it's generally everything's not down 25. Some are down 5 and some are down 50. Well, the key is to be out of the 50 and in the 5. So we do not believe that we are hired to manage cash. You can do that with a money market fund a lot more effectively. We manage equities.
And the comment Dave made about opportunities in emerging markets applies equally across developed markets. So there's always some, there's invariably somewhere to go.
Yeah.
Are there smaller sectors around besides materials that are in strong uptrend during
all this time? Well, this is similarly tied to the question here. The sectors that have been in trend have been the materials and energy area most strongly, consumer staples to some extent. The sectors that have been completely out of trend have been the financials. Technology's been pretty weak. Healthcare has been pretty weak. This is on a global basis. The leadership areas of materials and energy are being tested right now. Prudent investors have pulled in their overweights in the context of being overweight, reduced overweights. This is what we've done during an environment where the trends are being tested but not yet broken. It's not clear yet, but it will be, whether those trends re-exert themselves or roll over and new leadership emerges. The one area that's starting to exhibit leadership are healthcare, which has been out of favor for some time. High quality, growth area, especially around the biotech and medical services area. But I still like materials, and a lot of it's tied to emerging markets. What we tend to find is that we allow our winners to run. We'll have some stocks in the portfolio that will be in the portfolio for years. They're trending. The fundamentals make sense. We'll also find some stocks, some themes that we'll put in the portfolio that just don't work out. Well, we're not going to wait around for years until they work out. We're going to sell those themes. We're going to sell those ideas. And we're going to go find out what is working. So, turnover in the portfolio in the emerging markets, it tends to be about 100% a year, but it's not all stocks being turned over. There's a tail that gets turned over as we recognize that those themes aren't working.
Could you actually shed some light just on that point? What's your average holding, shortest holding period when you turn over?
You know, the shortest holding period typically, unless something blew up and violated one of our sale rules, would generally be a quarter, maybe a little bit longer. But there have been times when we've purchased an investment idea and it's wrong. And it's a mistake to override the market and saying, well, I'm going to be right eventually. Well, eventually you will be right. But, you know, down 40% might end up down 80%. You know, it's the old, you know, down 80% and then it doubles. You know, well, you're still down a whole bunch of money. I mean, that's a loser's game of making money over time.
So if your momentum rules are intact, whichever way you look at it, you are not overly bothered then by what I would call extreme PE expansion?
Not during certain times. There are certain market environments that warrant higher PE expansion. We look at everything on a PEG ratio, a PE to growth, and I would rather pay more for a company that's growing at a faster rate than less for a company that has no growth. One point that you brought up in terms of momentum, our momentum style is not trading momentum, it's investment momentum. It's identifying these long-term trends. A lot of people think about momentum, they think about hedge funds and turnover and volatility and trying to catch the trade of the day. We're really trying to get rid of that minutia by focusing on the longer-term investment trends, letting your winners run and compounding that over time.
Just one left field question. Why Wilmington, Delaware? Isn't that where all boats come from?
Yes.
Is there a tax advantage?
There is not. It's much more simplistic than that. The two founders of my firm, Dave Marvin and Stan Palmer, which are still both actively engaged in fund management at our firm. Dave's our CIO, CEO, and chairman of our board, managed the DuPont Pension Fund. And they did that from the late 1970s until 1986. They ran all of DuPont's pension products. And they left DuPont in 1986, and they had kids in school, and they didn't want to pull them out of school, so we stayed in Wilmington, Delaware. So a lot more simplistic than where boats come from.
Is it still where all the boats come from?
It is. There are tax reasons for having your boat there.
I've just learned something new about Wilmington, Delaware. I didn't know about the boats.
Yeah. We are large cap quality growth managers, and large cap going right to your point. We monitor the liquidity of all the positions, not only for each individual client, but in aggregate. It doesn't do me any good if I could come up to you and say, hey, I can get out of your stock in one day, if I've got, you know, 50 other clients that when you aggregate them all, it's going to take me 3 weeks to get out of those positions. Generally, we can be completely out of any position in the firm within 2 or 3 days. So we monitor that very closely. A lot of that has to do with, though, focusing on the large cap liquid space, over $1 billion in emerging markets.
So what happens if you become very successful in the retail space?
You won't be able to invest with us, and I welcome that opportunity. No, we absolutely will. One of the biggest things we've looked at, and that's actually a very serious question, because one of the problems that fund managers do is they become asset gatherers instead of fund managers. And, you know, we are fund managers, which is, you know, part of the reason why we've partnered here. This is not, I'm not out, you know, raising assets all the time. This is, you know, I've combined this with a research trip coming here, seeing clients in Australia, and also seeing some analysts here as well. So that's important. We focus on institutions primarily. To us, this is an institutional relationship. And by focusing on institutions, it forces you to focus on your return instead of going out and gathering assets. It's a big difference between a fund manager that's focused on asset gathering versus one that's focused on returns. It's half of our process. So we have not only all the fund managers that participate and work through the technical analysis of these screens that help us figure out when trends are turning and when they're starting. It's half our, we have two dedicated quantitative analysts that's all they do is look at these types of screens. So we're looking for, not only are we looking for trends, but you're looking for trends and are they accelerating or are they decelerating? And if they're negative trends, are they accelerating to the downside, or are they starting to get a little bit better? And you have to pay attention to the change around the trends. That's the advantage. That's where the discipline part of the process comes from. You know, what you really want, you want early trends that are accelerating. That's a really profitable place to make money for your clients.
The technical part of our work is also how a relatively small firm that's intentionally relatively small can cover the whole world, because it's all about focusing our attention and sort of working smart, I guess. At the back?
Yes, what's your largest single holding, or what's the largest single holding you would commit yourself to?
We don't hold anything greater than 5% at market. Mm-hmm. Generally, in our emerging market portfolios, without double counting ADRs, local shares, warrants, we're going to have, you know, roughly 80 positions in the portfolio. So positions that grow into that or that we've added into that. So once a position gets up to close to 5%, we'll start paring that down. So we believe in concentration, but not to the point where any one position, if something went wrong, would be disastrous for our clients.
And the top 10 positions in all of our portfolios would generally be roughly, say, 30% of the whole portfolio.
That's right. Sorry. Momentum tends to deteriorate faster than it accelerates. So it's easier to find the trends that are established, and you have to be very careful on exiting them. And that's where the sensitivity, that's really where the sensitivity is. That's a pretty repeatable observation, that momentum deteriorates faster than it builds.
Any further questions?
Interest in emerging markets, Dave. Graham Rich and I are leading a delegation, a study tour to Russia in October, and we've
good timing.
We've got 20.
Is that?
I think he wants to take me.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can help me answer this. We've got 20 people going. In fact, there's a couple of people in the room who are coming, and we've got 4 places left. So, can you think of any reason why anyone would want to go to Russia at the moment? I hope that we can.
I'd love to. Can you raffle one?
She's looking for a scholarship over here.
If you could help me explain why Russia is really important right now, it'd be really helpful.
Russia, despite the current conflicts and the current questions around political interference, corporate governance interference, targeting inflation with administrative controls, or you know, going after the oligarchs there, you know, accusing them of tax evasion, which they may well have done. Who knows? Russia's not going away. Russia has embedded themselves as integral in Western Europe as a natural gas and energy supplier. They've put themselves in a really interesting position because, you know, it's going to be very difficult for developed Europe to take a harsh stand against Russia's current political interests. I think that the current environment, they're just kind of making a point that we're here, we're not going away, you have to reckon with us, you can't sweep us under the carpet anymore, we want to be part of the WTO, you know, you can't build missile defense shields on our borders. You know, they're taking the opportunity to kind of stick out their chests a little bit. I've been to Russia, it's a fascinating place to go. It is still a bit of the Wild West in terms of the way things are getting done there, but hey, that's why they call them emerging markets. If Russia wasn't an emerging market, it'd be up in the big markets, and you know, you wouldn't have any interest in going there. So I think your timing is really interesting from a geopolitical perspective. And really, I would be focusing on political interference in private companies, listed companies, and corporate governance issues. There's two ways to play Russia, by the way. This will be my last comment. You can either play Russia against the government or with the government. You know, you can either own the companies that the government has stakes in or looks favorably on, or you can go with the oligarchs. And I tell you, right now, it's a lot safer to go with the government than against the government. Yeah, we use the MSCI guidelines for countries that are emerging or developed markets. MSCI has a whole series of tests. They rarely move countries between indices. The last time it happened was Greece and Portugal, which got promoted, which was really actually bad news. You become important in a smaller index to becoming unimportant in a big index. Ireland was promoted, you know, some time ago. Korea, Taiwan are likely the next candidates to get promoted. They look at GDP per capita. They look at currency convertibility. They look at political stability. They look at corporate governance. They look at precedent of law. You have to remember, a lot of these countries that, you know, that we're investing in, they weren't investable 20 years ago. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when many of these emerging markets were communist, had no capital markets. These are new. Right, so we tend to look back. You know, we're very short-sighted. We look at a country and think, oh, well, you know, Poland's been investable. Well, Poland hasn't been investable for that long. Czech Republic hasn't been investable for that long. Investing directly in China wasn't available not that long ago. So it's really about precedent and political, military, currency stability, and size of the economy as well. So, variety.
If there are no further questions, I might we might wrap up now, or I'm going to hand over to Boyd. You'll see Dave gets really excited about emerging markets. He also gets excited about developed markets. We do have both a developed market and an emerging market portfolio, and over to you, Boyd.
Thanks very much, Lorraine. I'm Equity Trustees, which is the business development managers. We take the product to you, the advisors. What I thought I'd do is, rather than put up the slide that says here's the Global Emerging Trust, here's the Global Equities Trust, I'd like to encapsulate... Sorry, is this actually on? Yeah. Could you turn up a little? Oh, you can hear it? Yeah. Oh, good.
I don't think you need it anyway.
Sorry, encapsulate some of the things you've said. I want to fire four or five questions at you. If you could embody some of the things. Performance-wise, your fund is number one, so the Morningstar tables, 30 June. Over the last year, you're number one. You let the side down because what are you? You're number two on 2 years and number four on 3 years, so lift your finger. But, I mean, you outperformed the MSCI by 16% last year. Was that stock picking luck, or was there a trend that you saw was emerging?
It's both. We definitely had value from bottom-up stock picking. But there's two ways to add value relative to a benchmark and for your clients. One's to be overweight the good, and one's to be underweight the bad. Last year, over the past 12 months, markets were very bifurcated, going back to the question back here. By emphasizing in the areas that outperform the benchmark and underemphasizing or de-emphasizing the toxic areas that had exposure to U.S. financials, for example, you can add value on both sides. So, you know, we're top-down, bottom-up. We make asset allocation decisions, and then we pick stocks. So we expect to add value both ways.
Now, the heading on the screen was, the markets are talking, are you listening? I'm going to put that one back on you. What is it saying at the moment? And are you listening to what it's saying, but what is it saying as well?
Yeah, the markets are rotating right now, and what we've done, and I touched on this just briefly, is we've pulled in some of our overweights and underweights. From an emerging market perspective, we were underweight China and India not very long ago. We were overweight Brazil. We were overweight Russia. We brought Russia down to slightly below neutral. We brought Brazil down modestly. We brought China up. We brought India up. Markets are rotating. They're searching for leadership. It's not clear whether previous leadership will reexert itself or whether we're going to rotate into some new area of leadership. A disciplined manager takes risk off the table when the trends aren't clear. If you ask me to guess, I think the old leadership will reemerge itself in terms of, because I'm such a bull on emerging markets, that's really positive for the materials and energy complex as well. So we'll see. It's unclear right now.
Now, you mentioned Malkiel. For those who can't place the name, Malkiel wrote a book in 1974, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Amongst things, you're not going to find a $50 note on the ground, because if it had value, someone would have picked it up. I read an interview he gave 2 years ago where at the end of it, after talking about there's no value, you can't stock pick, the interviewer said, are you in any particular stocks at the moment? And he shifted in his seat and he got excited and he said, well, actually, I've got four little stocks that they're just going to thrash it and I'm invested in them. So Malkiel himself has gone aggressive on individual stocks and stock picking. So I'm putting it back to you. Where's your own personal money at the moment?
Boats.
Boats. That's where it should be. My kids, I guess?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No. The vast wealth of anything I have, which is not much, but hopefully it will be someday, is back in our own products. We eat what we kill. We have some partnerships that are invested right alongside
of... what you cook, isn't it?
Eat what we kill, eat what we cook. Maybe it's the saying is different here. I don't know. We eat what we kill. Eat our own cooking? Maybe that's it. You eat what you kill. I eat my own cooking. Anyway, I'm invested back right alongside with you guys, and I think that's important. Not only are we independent, employee-owned, so Lorraine and I both own a small portion of Marvin & Palmer, so we want to do well because that's good for us, for our stock in Marvin & Palmer, but we put our own assets back right next to yours and your clients.
Have you got any tilts, global equity stress, global emerging?
I'm, as you might tell, I'm a big bull on emerging markets, so that's my tilt.
I asked this question of someone yesterday as well. The what keeps you awake, what keeps you inspired? You know, the fear and the reward.
Well, I answer the last one first. It's fun. This is really a fun business. And if you take some of the problem areas out by working with the market instead of, you know, the consternation all the time, you can really enjoy it and have a good time. And it's fun to win. You know, it's fun to beat the market. So that's what keeps you in the game. What keeps you, what keeps you awake at night is the rotation currently, and that, you know, markets are behaving irrationally right now. But I think that's just because of all the human behavior and the fear and that's going on in the markets right now. It'll sort itself out. It always does, and you know when it does, that's a buying opportunity. The world is not coming to an end.
No. One of the things. Now, sorry, we've got 6 minutes to go, but we're still going to get out a minute.
We're going to let these guys go eat lunch here. So.
But well, they haven't lifted the glad wrap yet. One of the things I discovered was that Marvin & Palmer have an investment board. And on the board, you've got some pretty heavy hitters, former Congress senators, heads of armaments companies. Where does the board fit into it? Are they feeding inside information? Are they feeding trends? Or are they professional board sitters? Dorothy Dix.
Yeah. They're not professional board members, but we do have... You know, I like to refer to our board as a think tank. It's a group of people that come to our offices every other month. And you're right, we have Senator Sam Nunn, who's former senator from Georgia, head of the Armed Senate Committee at one point. Al Schwartz, who was the former good guy chairman of Bear Stearns. But Greg, I mean, a guy like Al has given us so much insight into what's been happening in the financial markets and the financial crisis for years. Guys like Pedro Aspe, who was the former finance minister to Mexico, who have been incredibly helpful understanding what's been happening in Venezuela with Chavez, the opportunities in Brazil, Mexico as well. But this is all big picture stuff. It's more like think tank level. And then we go out with that information of risks and reward and opportunities and apply that at a portfolio construction level.
All right. I'll do the thank you in a moment. Just going to do the last little bit of housekeeping. David also wrote a fantastic paper, which is purely on this. So the deterioration in building a momentum, there's good content on that. Marvin and Palmer produce a quarterly newsletter. We'd be loving to send it to you. One of the ways that we can send it to you is I've got around about 50 or 60 of these 2 gigabyte memory sticks. So if you come down to our booth at lunchtime, give me your card. I'm going to capture your data, and then we're going to be able to send you that newsletter to give you a bit more information on that. We've just been rated by Standard & Poor's, so we've got the tick there. If you want this fund on your platform, it's on Scandia, but the others, they all want that $10 million of commitment, so please don't be afraid. We're rattling the can. It's telethon time. So help us in that regard. But finally, or do you do the thank you?
Go ahead.
Well, actually, I'll
read. No. Yeah? Come on. No, of course.
Oh, well, on behalf of everyone, thank you for coming down and joining us and taking the time to make the presentation, and we appreciate it very much.
Hey, thank you.
I'm sure everyone will agree that one of the highlights of this conference has been the caliber of the international speakers, and we're really grateful to you, Dave, for flying all this way from Delaware.
Okay, thank
We've learned a bit about Delaware today as well. So, yeah, on behalf of all of us, thank you very much. It's now the vote time. Those of you who weren't in the last session won't know that I have a 100% track record for the best of session. So I'm very keen to get Dave back for another go after lunch, but I need your help with that. So I'd be grateful if you could all get out your gizmos, put in the card, and while I remember, please leave the gizmo behind. Don't take it with you. But I'd like you please to vote as per the four points here. Are you ready to go? Yep. Okay, go.
Thank you.
It's time for lunch, so please make your way downstairs. But before you do, thanks again to Dave, to Lorraine, to Boyd, for a great presentation. Thanks, guys. Thank you.